Welcome to Agent Blue, your comic book explosion podcast. I'm George Green.
I'm Michael Bonanno III.
And today we're here to talk to you about two stories that have nothing to do with each other, but they kind of have a lot to do with each other. One is Venom, the Lethal Protector, and the other story is about Carnage.
Specifically just called Carnage.
So we're gonna jump right into this for our New Year's Eve episode, even though it's coming out on New Year's Day. So, Venom Lethal Protector is a Venom story that literally, like, the title explains the story super well. It is literally the Lethal Protector. Venom, in this, moves to California to get away from Spider-Man. He tells Spider-Man that he's pretty much like, hey, don't come after me. We're not going to come after you. And we'll just spend our lives apart. He goes, I'm done being a bad guy. This is, like, the Venom story arc where, like, they're starting to play with him a little bit more. They're trying to discover what they can do with Venom, you know, instead of just making him try to kill Spider-Man every, you know, five issues, six issues.
It also does seem, the way you're explaining it, does kind of seem to be in line with the actual nature of the alien race he's part of.
Yes, yes, it really does. But in this story, you still don't know that. I mean, this story is kind of old, and you don't find this out until, like, fucking... You don't find this out until... like 3 years ago. So anyways, to continue, the story of the Lethal Protector is we have Venom in California, and he's kind of just like, he's having trouble, you know. He's from California, but he's having trouble fitting in. He is still wanted, you know. He's on the most wanted list. He doesn't have anywhere to stay. He doesn't have anywhere to go.
This is still Eddie Brock as
this
Venom?
Is still Eddie Brock as Venom, yes. And he is just, I guess he's really just trying to figure out his way in life. And he ends up running across a couple of homeless people that are being harassed by some thugs. And he finds out through these homeless people that these thugs work for a guy named Roland. And this guy named Roland is trying to push these homeless people out of their homes. Now, in San Francisco, the whole earthquake that happened, there's a city underground. And all these homeless people have made a life for themselves in this city. It's like a secret city. You know, nobody really knows about it. Everybody forgot about it. And
Lost City of Atlantis.
Pretty much, kind of thing.
But not underwater.
But it's under Los Angeles. And pretty much the whole story is based off of Roland and Eddie Brock Venom just kind of like butting heads. Because Eddie Brock Venom's trying to protect these people, these homeless people. They have homes. It's just they're deemed homeless underneath the city of San Francisco. And Roland is trying to push them out because there is gold somewhere buried in that city.
The gold rush.
The gold rush. Well, what had happened was, I believe the year was 1906, there was an organization that was trying to destroy America, to try to, like, take down the American infrastructure so that they could take over the government.
Jealous much?
Yeah, just a little bit. So they had a very large stockpile of gold so they could buy, you know, weapons and explosives and stuff. And before all this happened, the earthquake hit and that gold was lost. You know, everybody kind of got lost to the decades is how they explained it in the book. And so after Venom saves these homeless people from these thugs, they take them back to this secret city underneath San Francisco. And this is where Venom first encounters more of Roland thugs, which are in these, like, giant, like, mech suits that are built for, like, excavations and, like, digging. So they're, like, suits with, like, sonic cannons and, like, diamond drill bits, and they're really giving Venom a run for his money. But Venom ends up taking out a couple of them and, you know, getting away. Another thing I should explain in this book is Venom really likes to tell you what he's doing. If you hit him with a sonic blast and you debilitate him and then they, like, talk for too long, they're like, oh yeah, we got Venom, Venom's down, la da da da, and then he's just, like, laying there, and then they're like, alright, let's hit him again to kill him, and Venom's like, ah, no, you guys talked for too long, I'm healed now, now I'm gonna mess you up. That happens about four times in this book.
Seems to happen a lot when it comes to symbiotes.
It's just the funniest thing because it literally is like happens again, and then like 4 pages later it happens again, and then 4 pages later it happens again. So every time he gets into a fight,
look, if you're trying to kill the Clintar, you just gotta go at it.
You hit him with a sonic, and then you shoot Eddie Brock in the head. You capture the symbiote, and then you keep it, and I would launch it into space. I don't want to run this planet anymore. So after Eddie Brock destroys these mechs and they kind of disappear off into the distance, and he goes into the city, and the city kind of has a hierarchy, and the way to get into the city is they have to vote you in. Well, they know who Eddie Brock is. They know who Venom is. He's a murderer. He's a killer. So they say, nah, no, can't do that. You're kicked out. All right. So they kick out Eddie Brock. And, you know, now he's back in the same position. He has nowhere to go. And he's just walking around San Francisco. And he gets noticed by some police officers. And a whole small scuffle ensues. He runs away because he's trying to be a good guy. You know, he's trying not to kill anybody anymore. And everyone keeps, you know, provoking him. So he just tries to run away every time. And in the other side, on New York, you see Spider-Man watching TV, and they're like, oh, you know, Eddie Brock's in San Francisco running amok. So Spider-Man's like, oh, great, you know, it's been so long since I've seen him. Now he's over here messing things up again. Let's go get him. So
just gotta go to San Francisco.
So Spider-Man makes his way over to San Francisco. He gets there really fast, too. Like, quick, considering he goes from one side of the country to another.
Did he, like,
he flew a plane. He didn't. Web-sling.
Well, I was going to ask if he, like, asked Tony Stark.
No, he literally flew a commercial plane.
Welcome to American Airlines.
Yeah, pretty much. So, continuing on with the story, Roland decides to invest his money elsewhere and forms a small team. It's kind of like a team. They kind of look like Deadpool. You know, with the way their, like, uniforms are set up. They're all different colors.
For money?
Well, they're called the Jury, and they all have, like, different abilities that their suits provide for them. You know, one's got, like, sonic abilities, the other one shoots fire, and then there's, like, 4 other ones that they don't really talk about very much.
Did they specifically choose those two to fight the Clintar?
Yes. Well, they're all fighting the Clintar, but that's the point. They're trying to take down Venom, because Roland's trying to get this money, and Venom's really the only thing standing in his way at this point.
For those of you who don't know, the Clintar is the actual alien race name for what the Venom symbiote is.
So, the Jury goes and decides to attack Venom. And they do a very good job, but like I said before, they get him down, they don't finish him, they talk too much, and then Venom gets back up, beats the snot out of him, and runs away. This happens twice. And then finally, the third time, they capture him. All right, but they capture him.
Times the charm.
They capture him in a different method. They're another guy that works for Roland's like, hey Venom, you know, we should team up and, like, you know, do some good stuff together. And Venom's like, well, I know this is a trap, but I'm gonna go for it anyways, just to see. Maybe I get some information out of it. Well, it was a serious trap, and he got no information out of it. He walks into a building, and it literally is a giant oven, and it just shoots fire everywhere. And they capture him because, you know, they're very weak to fire. So they have Venom captured, and what Roland decides to do with the Venom symbiote is extract the rest of his eggs. So you know how Venom makes Carnage, and it's kind of like a little egg that comes off the symbiote and finds a new host?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Roland figured out a scientific method to extract these little symbiote eggs, and he extracts 4 of them and uses them as his own private security force. And they're running around San Francisco while Venom's captured, running amok. They're just testing these symbiotes. And Spider-Man runs into the first one, which is a female. And Spider-Man is fighting this female symbiote, and he's talking to himself at this point. And he's like, wow. He goes, like, they're very strong, but, like, they suck at fighting. They're very new to this, I can tell. So, like, here's my opportunity to capitalize. And he literally just, like, jumps around, takes him out. And then they're like, oh, time to run away. So the lady, like, throws a guy off a building and then runs away in a jet. And Spider-Man's like, well, that's great. He goes, let's get onto this jet. And he's like, bam. And he shoots his webs.
Thwip.
Grabs the jet. And he's like, all right, I got him. And he's like, wait, I think they have me. And then he flies off. And then it runs back to Venom, and he's having a conversation between the symbiote and Eddie Brock, but they kind of have a conversation between themselves.
It's like talking to yourself.
The symbiote doesn't actually say anything in the book, but Eddie Brock is like,
we are
talking to the symbiote, but there's no like actual little
speech
bubble. You know,
so
he's
just like,
he's
you're
like, oh,
left to think what's on the other.
Yeah,
line.
He's like, you really think we
you're
should
just
do
watching
that?
Somebody on the phone.
Yeah, yeah. It's like talking. It's like sitting in front of somebody that's talking on the phone. You can't hear the other line, but you know they're talking to somebody. And what ends up happening is he's in a sonic bubble, which keeps the symbiote from leaving. But Eddie Brock is so strong that he moves the symbiote and is able to pop out of the bubble enough to grab the guard in front of him. And then he's able to pull himself out of the bubble. And then, you know, the symbiote comes back. And they're like, oh, my goodness. And Roland's like, you guys are so stupid. And they're like, you calibrated it for the symbiote, but not for a human. And he's pissed, right? The jury comes in, beats Venom back up, and they shove him back in there, right? Well, they don't shove him back in there because it doesn't work. And then Spider-Man's in the building at this time. And he was trying to do the quiet approach. And then a spider sense goes. As soon as the spider sense goes off, Spider-Man's like, well, they saw me, I'm going in. And he goes in. They did not actually see him.
Just
they didn't actually
up.
See him. They didn't
Spider-Man,
actually
your spidey
see
sense
him.
Doesn't work like that.
His spider sense goes off, and he attacks the first person he sees.
What if that was an
He's
ally?
He's like in the air ducts, and his spider sense goes off. He jumps out of the air ducts and attacks the first person that he sees. And it's hilarious, because he was 100% hidden. And he's like, wow, I really messed up. There's a lot of people here. He's like, I should have just stick to the quiet approach. He goes, going loud should never be an option in my book. Note to self. And a screen comes up, and it's Roland talking to Spider-Man. And he's like, hey, you know, I know you're here for Venom, but, you know, we killed him. And Eddie Brock's laying there, and he looks dead. And Spider-Man's like, I know Eddie Brock better than that. He's like, I'm going to come find out for myself, because I know he's not dead. 2 seconds later, you hear on the screen, sir, he's not dead. And then Roland cuts the feet off right away. And Spider-Man's like, I told you. Told you so.
I don't want to be that guy, but told
Spider-Man
you so.
Spider-Man makes it to Venom. Venom beats the snot out of some guards. Roland gets away. And the rest of the symbiotes converge on them. Right? Eddie Brock does not have the symbiote. They thought they killed him by taking his symbiote off of him. It did not kill him. You know, Eddie Brock's so strong, he withstood all that trauma from the symbiote being removed, because they were bonded for so long, you know.
But he was strong enough to not die from it?
Strong enough to not die from it, yes. So, now Spider-Man and Venom are teamed up, and they are fighting against the four other symbiotes. Now, like Spider-Man said before, the symbiotes are new to this, so they're not very good. And he runs into Eddie Brock, and Eddie Brock's like, don't worry, I got this, and pushes Spider-Man to the side, and he's like, all my children, come to me. And he opens up his arms, and all four symbiotes punch him in the face. And Eddie Brock's talking to Spider-Man, he's like, oh man, oh jeez, I thought that would have worked better. Spider-Man's like, I got a better idea. And like Eddie Brock's like, no, I have another idea. Let's go get my symbiote.
Let's get my guy.
So they run away, and Spider-Man's like, I can't believe I'm helping Venom right now. So they go and get Venom symbiote. Venom attaches to his symbiote.
Rebonds
to it, and they're fighting these guys, and like they're a little overpowered. You know, they're under strength. They're outmatched. They're outnumbered, and Spider-Man goes up to this machine, and he presses a button, and the button is a sonic, like, ray, and it hits three of the symbiotes. The fourth one ducked behind everybody, but the fight that's ensuing between Spider-Man and Venom and the one symbiote, they have enough time to talk, like, oh, if we beef this up a little bit, we can kill all four of them. And Spider-Man's like, well, we can't do that because it might kill the hosts. And Venom's like, well, that's a risk we're gonna have to take, because, you know, we can't let them beat us. And Venom just pushes Spider-Man out the way, presses the button anyways. And he's just like, you know, screw you, Spider-Man. Kills all four symbiotes. All four guys live. Spider-Man's like, wow, Venom, you're a dick. And that's pretty much where the story ends. Roland gets arrested. The city of San Francisco finds the gold, takes it for themselves, because it's technically, since it's like, it would technically be like public, you know, so the city of San Francisco would get it. And it's really how the story ends. Spider-Man's talking to Mary Jane on the phone, and he's like, I mean, I hate to leave Venom here, but I mean, it really feels like he's kind of trying to do some good.
And the day is saved thanks to Venom and Spider-Man.
The final, like, epilogue of the story is Venom gets accepted into the little secret society underneath San Francisco, and like, he's like, you know, I finally have a place where I belong, you know, so it kind of ends on a happy note. And that's really the story of Lethal Protector. I mean, it's a very simple story. It's very linear. It's one line straight through. It was a very nice story to read, you know. You read, like, Thor, and it jumps around a bit. Doctor Strange kind of jumped around a bit. It was a very easy story to cover because it was just one line straight through. Story's done.
That's kind of how I felt with mine. It was only 5 issues.
Lethal Protector was 6.
All right, so not that much of a difference.
Not that much, yeah.
All right, well, now that we've covered the father, let's cover the son. Yes, I'm talking about Carnage. Now, for this, there's a few things you need to know. Prior to this event, the Avengers defeated Cletus Kasady as Carnage, and Sentry, which is the Marvel's analog to Superman, ripped him in half and threw him into outer space.
Oh, okay. I did not know that happened. I know Sentry liked to rip people in half, but I didn't know he did it to Carnage, too.
Yes. And so, this is where we come into the story. It begins after all that occurred. There's this company called Hall Tech, run by a guy named Michael Hall, and he found a little bit of symbiote that was left over from Carnage and created a prosthetic limb.
Out of a symbiote.
Well, he put the symbiote in the prosthetic limb.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was meant for, because like we've talked about it, the bonding process.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of like a regular prosthetic where it's binary ones and zeros, this one actually is controlled by your thoughts. So if you think, open, close your hand, yes. Move your fingers in a certain way, it'll do it. And that's the idea. And so
That's really smart. It's a smart idea.
So Michael is standing up and he's announcing this to the world, and during this entire time, he is bashing Tony Stark. Like, he's just saying, like our friend Tony Stark, we have this. Unfortunately for him, we're more advanced.
Oh,
and he's just like playing with it. And Tony Stark is sitting there watching. And he leaves, and he's just like, hey, Pepper, something's wrong with the prosthetic limb. Like, it is too advanced for something that we would have on Earth. It doesn't make any sense. Can you look into it? And then a loud scream, oh my god, appears in the back. And Pepper's like, is that, oh my god, that's Tony Stark, or oh my god, there's trouble. And he turns around and sees Doppelganger, which is actually a child of Carnage, one of them. It looks like Spider-Man, but it has 6 arms, which is why they call him Doppelganger. And he is whipping through the city trying to get to this armored truck. And this car is trying to smash into that truck at the same time. You find out the reason is because Cletus' girlfriend, Shriek, is in that armored truck being transferred. The car behind it is her psychiatrist, and Doppelganger views Shriek as its mother, which is the only reason it is okay with Carnage in the first place. Like, none of his children like him. None of Carnage's children like Carnage. They're only there out of loyalty for Shriek. And Shriek and Carnage's relationship is very much like Joker and Harley Quinn, where Carnage is just like, yeah, babe, yeah, I love you, but go over there.
Whatever. Get out of my face.
I'm trying to beat these guys up.
I'm busy.
And that's how that is. But so, he gets on it and essentially derails the armored truck, allowing Shriek to get loose, but nobody knows it. Iron Man calls up Peter, and he's like, hey, I know you're calling a day off, But how many arms do you have right now? I'm looking for a number between 2 and 6. And Peter is like, 2? And he's like, good. But not good, because we have a situation going on. Can you get down here? And Peter looks down at his cereal, because he's eating, and he's like, dang it. So he's whipping through the city, trying to eat cereal at the same time.
Oh man, that sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like a challenge.
He lands, and all the cereal's over his costume. And Iron Man makes a mention of that. He's like, have a little accident? He's like, I tried to multitask. Never again. So he looks at...
That's great.
He looks great. At what's going on, Peter does, Spider-Man does, and he realizes, oh, I know what's going on. So he tells him that the last time he fought these creatures, it incited mass riots. But he didn't know how, so he thought, oh, it was doppelgangers, power. No, it was Shriek. And the second he says that, he's just like, okay, well, there's no riots, so I guess we're good.
Yeah,
kill
riots,
them!
Riots
burn them
start,
with fire!
Riots just start going and just going crazy.
Just in the background, it's like, kill them! Burn them with fire! There's a mass riot behind me right now, isn't there? Yep.
Oh, man. That's great. That's
so, the psychiatrist of Shriek tries to come out and help, and as guards go to shoot Shriek, the psychiatrist jumps in the way and gets her arm just obliterated off.
Oh, that's great. This innocence dying, getting mutilated and castrated and emancipated.
No. Yeah, well, she didn't die. Instead, she was brought to a special hospital, and Tony...
Let me guess really quick. The psychiatrist gets a... arm.
Gets the arm,
and it ends up being Carnage. Did I guess that correctly?
You...
Comic book logic 101.
Well, here's what happens. So Spider-Man shows up, and he's just like, well, Tony offered that he's willing to pay for a prosthetic limb, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, they already beat you to it. And she lifts up her new prosthetic arm, and Spider-Man's like, who are they, and how do I get on their health plan?
Let's get with those guys. That looks like a great arm.
I need that health plan.
Well, good thing Spider-Man didn't get that arm. That would have been a real problem.
No, that would have been horrible. So, she tells him as much as she can, but she has to not say too much because it turns out that her boss is Michael Hall from Hall Tech.
Of course it is.
That's why she gets the arm.
That's why.
And
oh,
that's why,
man.
Shriek is getting transferred. Because this is when you find out that Michael Hall wasn't just interested in that one piece of symbiote. No. He went to outer space and got Cletus Kasady back.
Oh, snap.
And the thing about the symbiote's ability is, remember how you said in your story how they should have just left him in space?
Yeah,
the thing is, their powers allow them to give some oxygen to the body for as long as possible until itself dies, which could be a while.
Yeah, symbiotes don't really die that easily. They're very hard to kill.
So it turns out they gave Cletus Kasady a whole new lower half.
They Darth Mauled him, didn't they? He got two little robot legs.
Yes. But he doesn't have the symbiote anymore because they're using it for something else. It turns out that the symbiote was used to be put in those guards that I mentioned earlier that was trying to kill Shriek.
So pretty much Lethal Protector, but it involves Carnage instead. It's pretty much, we just read the same story. It just...
Well,
deals with Cletus Kasady and him killing
everybody.
Yeah,
but this one, he's trying to be a hero.
Yeah,
this one is still a murderous person.
Yeah, Cletus Kasady is like, let me just kill everybody. I'm just gonna kill everybody. That's literally what he does. He just goes around killing people. Spider-Man
right.
will catch him, try
so,
to beat him up. But they finally catch him. He goes to jail, gets the symbiote back because somebody with some money wants to use the symbiote for some bad. He gets out, he goes back to killing people.
Well, no, Michael thought that he could use this for...
What did you think?
What I thought?
Yeah.
Well, I knew straight off the bat that whatever he wanted to do was not going to happen.
Not going to be a good guy.
Because, like, he wanted to use that symbiote to make a lot of tech to be better than Tony Stark. Now, I get that. But the thing is, that symbiote was still hanging around and decided to cover the psychiatrist, which is now a female Carnage. But she refused to give in with her mind. So, the Carnage symbiote just controlled her body and went on a mass spree of trying to kill everybody.
That's nice. That's always a good thing. Carnage just likes to kill people. So, even without Cletus. Even when Cletus got lobotomized, Carnage still killed people.
Yep. And this is when Cletus shows up, telling you
Cletus
what happened. He laughs a bit, holds out his arm, and the symbiote that's on top of the psychiatrist
runs
right back to
right
real
back
Carnage.
Oh yeah, that always happens. The symbiotes always are attracted to their like main host, the one that they've been attached to the longest. Like once, especially with like Cletus and Carnage, like they bonded together so nicely the first time that Carnage could be on a new host. Carnage could be on like Juggernaut and like having the best time of his life.
And would still go to
and
Cletus
would
Cassidy.
Still go back to Cletus Cassidy because that's like his host.
Yeah.
That's like his daddy.
Yeah. So the psychiatrist runs away. And
I would too.
Yeah. Not really the best idea.
He ain't getting away, but that's still trying to run.
Shriek shows up where she hides. And she holds her pretty much at gunpoint, but not, because she has the ability of like a sonic scream similar to Black Canary or Banshee.
I figured.
But also the ability to incite mass riots with just a thought. So she's like, "You thought you were doing good, huh? Well, look at me now." And the psychiatrist was like, "I can't let you guys win." And she realizes what the arm is. And she cuts it off her. She cuts the arm off herself by jumping out of a window.
How do you cut an arm off by jumping out of a window?
I guess the glass kind of ripped it off. It didn't really tell you how. It just, like, she was trying to rip it off.
Pops off. That's great.
But now Shriek has it, so she just attaches it and, like, the part of it. Have you ever seen Spider-Man Unlimited? The old 1990s cartoon with Venom and Carnage, and they had those little things that they put on people, and it grew, and they were like just part of the synoptic.
Yeah.
Well, this is what it looked like. It just looked like that on her. And she shows up, and at this point, Carnage has taken all of the symbiotes out of all the guards, because they came to try to fight. And he took the symbiote by breaking their bodies and crushing them, and then essentially just gluing onto him.
That's nice.
And then, so he calls himself Mass Carnage. He's like this big black and red hulking looking monster. And Shriek comes up like, "Hey, baby!" And he's like, I'm kind of busy here trying to beat up Iron Man and Spider-Man. Go incite mass riot or something. Just leave me alone. And so that's pretty much what happens. And Spider-Man and Iron Man are, like, getting obliterated horribly. Somehow, the psychiatrist is able to remove the arm off of Shriek. And the symbiote inside of it attaches to her. And it creates the newest baby of Carnage, Scorn. But this time she lets it control her brain, too. She, essentially, she kills Shriek and kills Carnage.
Again.
Yeah, but like, he should be dead, like, permanently at this point with how she, like, destroyed them. And then she runs away because the psychiatrist in her doesn't want to harm Spider-Man and Iron Man. But, of course, the symbiote does.
Right, of course. That's always how the symbiotes work. They just want to harm everybody.
So now everybody's in their place, and Spider-Man, who did the intro saying, "This should have been a normal day, but wasn't," does the outro saying, "I would ask her for help for other things, because she was a great ally, but her other half really doesn't like me." So that's pretty much how it ends, and then the epilogue, it's just a voice. It's a disembodied voice like, you know, speech bubbles saying something. And then the last panel, Cletus Kasady petting Doppelganger saying, "It's not over yet." And that's the end of it. That's the end. That is how it ends. It's not over yet. That's pretty
that's
much
it.
A story
wow,
of Carnage.
It's a very interesting story. I'm going to have to borrow that. I'm definitely going to read that one. Thanks. Thanks, as you hand me the book. All right. I mean,
I have a bit of Jesus notes.
Both of those stories were
pretty similar.
Pretty similar, but like Venom and Carnage, obviously, they had their differences. But I really liked doing this. The whole
it fit together.
It did. It did fit together pretty well.
We did father and son, you know, similarly, and oddly, the stories seem to align
they
pretty
did.
Well.
They aligned very well. I liked it. So, I mean, why don't you go ahead and get on with your notes.
All right. So, for Venom, I was actually thinking about while you were talking, of course. For Venom, it really looks like he's trying to do his best to be a hero.
In the whole story, that's really what it's focused on. It's a lot of, like, Eddie Brock and Venom, like, having conversations with each other. And a lot of, like, personal conversations and, like, a lot of personal conflict with them trying to do good, even though Venom wants to do so much evil.
Exactly, and that's the thing. For instance, I like to refer to the symbiote similarly to sin, because it builds into your natural person who you are. So, like, we all know Spider-Man 3, we saw that, forget about it. But like, what you did see was that rage. It really strengthens that rage.
That
and
story
so,
actually really captures, like, the essence of Venom. Like, Spider-Man 3 really captured, like, the beginning.
What Venom is,
what Venom
but they
is.
Did it horribly
they,
because
they,
Sam
they,
Raimi didn't want to
yeah,
do that movie.
Yeah.
He didn't want to. And he's gone on record several times saying, no, get rid of it. But anyways, back to this story. And the Lethal Protector. You see that, like, Venom wants to do all this evil and is more willing to kill than, say, Spider-Man.
Of course.
But Eddie really wants to do good, and he has that internal struggle very similar to, remember when I still told about the DC medal with the Batman Who Laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Brock is us humans, the symbiote is sin, and there's that struggle of power, trying to be our best but unable to, which is why we need Jesus. Unfortunately, Eddie Brock got the sin in a church, so maybe that's not the best thing.
I mean, he does become a hero eventually, but
he's
not right now.
He's a hero, but he's not the best. He's still struggling
with
it.
He tries. I mean, he's really overpowered. So, he's getting it.
Okay, and as for Carnage, what we see is, in the very beginning, what we got is Spider-Man trying to have his own day. Like, his day to himself. But when Iron Man calls upon him, telling him what's going on, he realizes, again, with this great power comes great responsibility. And if he is the only one who knows how to handle it, he's obligated to go for it. And my favorite verse very well sums it up. Luke 12:48, "For whom much has been given, much more will be required." And you see that. Even when Spider-Man is near death, and Scorn has to come in and kill Carnage, Spider-Man's still not giving up. Because he knows where he is, who he is, thanks to his Uncle Ben, who instilled in him the words of the gospel. I mean, they are Orthodox Catholics, the parents, his aunt and uncle were. We can go on and on about what Peter is, but we
it's
don't
a long
need
story. We
that's
that
that's
for
a long
6
story.
Hours if you wanted to.
We could, but that's not the point. The point is, even through all of that, he struggles but keeps a hold of who he is. Carnage, of course, is evil incarnate, and it's sin in general, causing mass riots with
Screech.
Yep, and all the stuff he's done, such as murder and... that's pretty much all he's done.
He just murders. It's bad enough. Trust me, it's bad enough.
And you see that the sin taking over, but Cletus has always had that sin. If you know anything about his origins, he killed his parents and burned down the orphanage he was in. So what you got there is that fight for
good and evil.
Good and evil, which is constant throughout the scriptures, which is constant throughout all of it, not just Revelation, but from Genesis to Revelation,
it's
you see that.
Constant throughout everything, the struggle between good and evil.
I mean, if you listen to a lot of my Christian rap songs, they're all like very similar to that story of fighting evil because it's what it really is. You can take these superheroes, but they're really modern myths. They're just telling you the same things we've heard over and over again, which is why I love being able to connect it to the scriptures. So that's about it.
All right. Well, from us here at Agent Blue, we're going to wish you a happy new year. We wish you the best of luck with this coming year. We wish you the best that you could be. And I mean, that's really all we got. So,
peace.